American dream. His last breath, he'll always be a soldier.
Heard on great radio stations all across America. It's The National Defense with Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry.
The National Defense is made possible by Ford. Go further. By The Home Depot. More saving, more doing. By ADT Security. More than just a line in the sand. By VSP. For more information on how VSP can help you with your corrective vision needs, visit their website at VSP.com. And by Farmers Insurance. At Farmers, we know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two. Find an agent at Farmers.com.
This is the National Defense, Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry. And Jerry, as always, our dedication.
Hey, this show's for you, the men and women serving in our military. It's for the millions of veterans out there, and it's for all their families. We're here for you. We love you. God bless you.
So we're based right here in Kansas City, Missouri. And I...
Now you tell me.
For my money, I think one of the best attractions in the world is the world, the National World War One Museum.
It's a gem. It's a Kansas City.
It's a worldwide gem.
Yes, if you come to Kansas City and you don't make it there, then you're missing out. Go there before you have barbecue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know what? There are still people, I think, in Kansas City that have not been there, and that is
I know. That's something, isn't it?
Yeah. Laura Vogt, the museum curator of education, is with us again. Laura, how are you?
I am fantastic. So pleased to be speaking with you all today.
You look good.
Yeah,
good
absolutely.
To see you again.
Good to see you guys.
How often do you change the exhibits down there? It seems like you've got something new, what, every 3-6 months or something?
Oh, more than that. We have, oh my goodness, we've got 5 different interior gallery spaces at the National World War One Museum and Memorial. And so we are constantly rotating. I would say probably in a year, there are about eight or so different exhibits that you might see or that might get rolled out. We also actually right now have 2 traveling exhibits. One, if anyone is listening and is going to be heading to New York City, you can see our Field of Battle Lands of Peace traveling exhibit that's going to be in New York over the summer. And there is an exhibit about the volunteers that is also traveling around the nation. You can find out more about both of those at our website, www.theworldwar.org. Hmm. But the newest gallery at the museum, the Wiley Gallery, just opened last month, and we're thrilled.
Is that the one called Gassed?
It is. We have, and it is monumental in both the figurative and the literal sense. In this new gallery space, we have the exhibition, John Singer, Sergeant Gassed. And only for the second time in the United States since it was completed in 1919, John Singer Sargent's monumental painting, which is about 21 feet long, over 9 feet high, is in the National World War One Museum and Memorial. That's actually the first time that it's been in the Midwest, and potentially the last time that it will be traveling to the United States. And it's just it's breathtaking. It's a really stunning. Stunning oil painting.
And for those that don't know, I don't know where you've been, but in case you don't know, gas was used, mustard gas primarily, it was used quite a bit during World War One. Accounted for a lot of casualties.
Yep.
And that's why I'm sure the painting is very poignant.
It absolutely is poignant. And I was actually speaking with a gentleman who he himself was blinded in the line of action. And we were speaking about a program that's coming up at the museum at the end of the month, where we're looking at some of those enduring legacies of Gassed. And I hadn't shared, it was actually not public information that this painting was coming to the museum. And as he was describing to me about a partnership and a work that we'll be doing together later on in the fall, he talked about this image. When people think of wounded veterans, the image that they see in their head is this line of men with white cloth wrapped around their eyes, walking in a line. And that is the oil painting by John Singer Sargent. Now, Sargent was actually an American painter who went to the front lines in France. He was on the Western Front in 1918, and he was looking for kind of a spark to do a painting on Anglo-American cooperation when he came across this dressing station, which was nearby a Berber Arras, this battle that had been occurring. And there were all of these British soldiers who had been temporarily blinded by mustard gas.
Oh, wow.
And he refocused his painting from cooperation to pain. And that heroism as well, and the sacrifices that folks are made, folks make on the front line. It's really an incredible art piece to have. We've got some of his sketches as well that we show kind of how he helped capture these images for that monumental piece. And then we also talk about that enduring legacy of gas. And we look at, from World War I through to today, the protection and detection of chemical weapons and the determination and the ingenuity that it takes to kind of lead and protect against that particular weapon.
Man, isn't it funny how everything comes full circle, Jerry?
Yeah, I was just thinking that, you know, because there is a tragic legacy in a couple of ways to the gas in World War One. Certainly the casualties, because a fair amount of men who were gassed were able to return home,
right?
But they suffered debilitating injuries and blindness. Quite a few of them died. You know, it's not much different than, you know, Agent Orange from Vietnam.
Right, exactly.
Gulf War illness.
Yep.
You know, the burn pits in Iraq. Yeah, all these things have lasting and tragic impact on those exposed.
Hey, Laura, we're talking to Laura Vogt from the World War One Museum. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, in World War One, it accounts for about 3% of the deaths, and yet it is the image, you know, of not only men and women but also animals wearing these gas masks.
Yeah, right. That's what really struck me.
And 3% might just sound like a low number, but when you look at
but when it's over 9 million casualties,
exactly.
It's not that low. You're right.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
But you guys, a little off subject from the most recent exhibit is the commemoration.
Indeed. So at the National World War One Museum and Memorial, we have been commemorating the centennial of World War One really from the beginning. Of the war, which is June 26th of 1914, we've been commemorating the centennial since June of 2014, and really with the United States Centennial Commission led the way, and on April 6th held a ceremony with thousands on our property commemorating the U.S. involvement in the war. In April 6th of 1917, I have to slow down because I'm always 100 years off.
Exactly.
So, right. So about, you know, roughly about a year ago now, we had a really beautiful and a moving ceremony for those Americans, both on the home front and who went over there to take part in this to take part in this action and to make the world safe for democracy, as Woodrow Wilson declared on April 2nd as he shared this, as he shared his ideas with Congress. And then we are continuing into these commemorations, focusing in on some of the different actions of the different services. We've got a conversation coming up about Canteen here in April. We are always looking at these varying lenses within which the world was changed, and each of these individual stories. So we talk about the medical kind of the medical sacrifices and the medical innovations that occurred. We are looking at women at war at the end of the month, and we're talking with some scholars about the Hello Girls and about the sacrifices that they made as well. And if you're not able to join us here in Kansas City, we would encourage you to go onto our website.
Oh, there's some great stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. You can actually take a look at a lot of these programs are actually recorded, and then you can go to our YouTube channel and take a look.
We're standing guard with the truth, the national defense.
Home is not just something you can see or touch. Home is a feeling. It's the place where you feel safe to have those little moments that mean everything. At ADT, we believe that feeling should always be there, whether it's at your house or your business. We help keep you safe so you can have those moments that make you feel at home.
You are loved.
Wherever you are.
How do you thank the millions of men and women who have fought so bravely for our country over the years? At the Home Depot, we think it takes more than words. We believe the best way to show gratitude is to do gratitude. The Home Depot Foundation is committed to veterans and their families, improving their homes and their lives. Since 2011, we've invested $160 million to veteran causes and impacted over 26,000 veteran homes. By 2020, we'll grow that investment to $250 million. From simple wheelchair ramps to complete home makeovers, transitional housing, community support. We consider it a duty and a privilege to serve senior, wounded, and homeless veterans the best ways we know how. After all they've given us, it's the least we could do. $250 million by 2020. Doing more for veterans. Doing gratitude. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing.
Welcome to F-150 Radio, the new 2018 Ford F-150. It doesn't just raise the bar, it is the bar. Dean, go.
I'm all about lowering the bar, like I only brush my teeth on Monday.
The new Ford F-150 lineup raises the bar by being number one in towing, payload, and torque. It can make you more capable.
Capable, shmapable.
The new 2018 Ford F-150. It doesn't just raise the bar, it is the bar.
When properly configured, classes full-size pickups under 8,500 pounds GVWR based on Ford segmentation.
In a military warehouse south of Washington, D.C., a USO stuffing party is in full swing. By the end of the day, volunteers will have stuffed over 10,000 USO care packages, packed them in boxes, loaded them on trucks, and sent them on their way to our soldiers in Iraq, Afghanistan, and military bases around the world. They'll stuff them full of things that most of us take for granted, but that our troops don't often have. Things like toiletries, playing cards, candy, books, little things. Little things that carry an enormous message to our troops. Little things like thank you, like we'll never forget you, like we're behind you 100%, like we love and cherish each and every one of you. Little things. We're all about the little things. We're the USO. So are you. For more information and to find out how you can help, visit us at USO.org. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
Laura Vogt, the museum curator of education, is with us.
The World War One Museum, aside from all the exhibits you have and all the education opportunities there are for young people and other people at the museum, the museum does a great job. It's a beautiful place. Veterans Day, Memorial Day.
Yeah.
You do such a wonderful job honoring our veterans.
Thank you. I have to say, and I am a transplant to Kansas City, but I just have to say that Kansas City really does Memorial Day right.
Yep.
And it is an honor to be a part of it. I mean, really, the entire city comes together. And with a celebration at the station, with the Kansas City Symphony coming out and playing.
Yeah, that's cool.
It really is. It's what Memorial Day is supposed to be. It's
right.
To be coming out and to be honoring your veterans. They're playing, and then when we've got the fireworks over the memorial at the end of the day, and then on that next day, being able to host ceremonies that involve many times international dignitaries.
Yes.
And really honor men and women from World War I through to today. Every single time we hear the Armed Forces melodies, I get goosebumps.
Yeah.
And it's an honor to be a part of that. And we're really looking forward to our upcoming ceremony. And then also the November 11 ceremony of this year also marks Armistice Day and the day that World War I ends.
So, Laura,
doesn't actually officially end. The armistice is signed. Some could argue that World War I continues on through today.
Well, that's true. What's the best way for people to find out more about the World War I Museum?
Oh, thanks for asking. Best way for people to find out more information is to go to our website, www.theworldwar.org. There you can find a link to our YouTube channel, which has over 200 different programs and lectures that you can connect with, and you can explore our timelines, and we've got some digital exhibitions out there as well. And also gives you some directions on how to get there and what our opening hours are. And we'd love to see you.
Laura, you got a great job. Thank you so much for being on the program.
You guys, it's always such a pleasure to talk with you. And hopefully I'll get to see you all in the museum between now and June 3rd.
Absolutely.
Before gas closes.
That would be fantastic.
Thanks.
Yeah, we got to see that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Laura.
We'll be right back with the National Defense right after this word from Farmers Insurance. When you're dealing with life's ups and downs, it helps to know the ins and outs of insurance. Farmers Insurance has been sharing practical insurance knowledge for more than 89 years. At Farmers, we know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two. Find an agent at farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Not just something you can see or touch. Home is a feeling. It's the place where you feel safe to have those little moments that mean everything. At ADT, we believe that feeling should always be there, whether it's at your house or your business. We help keep you safe so you can have those moments that make you feel at home. Wherever you are.
Welcome to F-150 Radio, the new 2018 Ford F-150. It doesn't just raise the bar, it is the bar. Dean, go.
I'm all about lowering the bar, like I only brush my teeth on Monday.
The new Ford F-150 lineup raises the bar by being number one in towing, payload, and torque. It can make you more capable.
Capable, shmapable.
The new 2018 Ford F-150. It doesn't just raise the bar, it is the bar.
When properly configured, Plus's full-size pickups under 8,500 pounds GVWR based on Ford segmentation.
How do you thank the millions of men and women who have fought so bravely for our country over the years? At the Home Depot, we think it takes more than words. We believe the best way to show gratitude is to do gratitude. The Home Depot Foundation is committed to veterans and their families, improving their homes and their lives. Since 2011, we've invested $160 million to veteran causes and impacted over 26,000 veteran homes. By 2020, we'll grow that investment to $250 million. From simple wheelchair ramps to complete home makeovers, transitional housing, community support, we consider it a duty and a privilege to serve senior, wounded, and homeless veterans the best ways we know how. After all they've given us, it's the least we could do. $250 million by 2020. Doing more for veterans. Doing gratitude. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing.
This is the National Defense.
Hey, welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller, Jerry Newberry, and Dr. Aaron Krebs is with us from the Minneapolis Veterans Affairs Center for Chronic Disease Outcomes Research. That's a long title.
Wow.
That's a big, long title. How are you, doctor?
I'm great. Thank you.
You know, this is something that seems like is in the news every single day now about opioids.
Especially now. Our president calling for the death penalty. And
so many things. Right, exactly. And there's been a fascinating study done. And this is kind of the other side of this, doctor. The people that are on opioids now, and I didn't really think about this really until I heard you speak about it, about how these people that are affected by this, with all of the call for ban opioids, get rid of opioids, all of a sudden they're freaking out about, they're going to take away my opioids.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the other side of that, right?
It is. It's a tough spot to be in, actually.
Yeah, right.
Well,
yeah.
Well, how much of I know that they use placebos all the time. Now, how frequently are placebos used in lieu of opioids? Any idea? Was that how part of your studies worked?
You know, we did not use placebos in this study. I think prior studies have compared opioids to placebo, you know, sugar pill, no active ingredient.
Uh-huh.
And those studies more or less found that opioids are better than a placebo. Of course, you know, most people aren't going to their doctor and asking for a placebo if they have serious pain.
Yeah, exactly.
So we compared opioids to other pain medications that are actually available to be prescribed.
So prescribed or over the counter?
Well, in this study, it was mostly prescribed medications, although some of them are available over the counter. So, for example, we used if people had not really given it the old college try, we did try acetaminophen, which is available over the counter, but that was just the first thing we tried for those folks and not where we stopped.
And so the people that are in the study, were they in various stages of relying on opioids, or was mainly chronic conditions? What were the patient makeup look like?
Yeah, so in this study, we actually started with people who were not currently taking opioids on a regular basis, although many of them had used opioids before. But they all had serious back pain or arthritis pain that had been present for at least 6 months.
Hmm.
Mostly had pain for many years. And they were all veterans being seen for care at the Minneapolis VA.
Hmm. Now, let me ask you this. You know, and my ignorance is going to show throughout this segment. How does a person know, other than if reading the label, if they're receiving an opioid?
Yeah, good question. Well, opioids are controlled substances in the U.S. So this is something that generally you would not be able to get refills on the medication.
I see.
Your doctor's keeping close tabs on it, likely making you either call in or come in every single month to get a new medication fill. And that's because the DEA requires that they be very closely monitored due to the potential for abuse and addiction.
Hmm. Well, okay, I have an equally ignorant question. Since we have the doctor on with us here.
I'm happy to help.
We're good looking. We're not very smart.
There's no bad questions.
Dr. Aaron Krebs. So are all opioids addictive?
Yes.
Okay.
And they are all you know, essentially all of these medications are either natural or synthetic chemical derivatives from the poppy plant, from opium. They're all related to opium. So, you know, heroin is an opioid that is a synthetic derivative of the poppy plant that is not used medically and is only an illicit drug, you know, but they are all related on some level.
Yeah, I mean, it's so tough to kind of sort out all the information right now that comes at you about opioids, because you either hear they're all horrible or they're all fantastic. But, I mean, you know, there's kind of no gray area there. But what did your study find out about these people that that take opioids?
Well, so what we did in this study is we found 240 volunteers who were willing to do this, you know, to learn more about how these medications worked. And we assigned them at random using a computer, a random number generator, to receive either treatment with opioids or treatment with non-opioid medications for a year.
For a year? Okay.
For a year. Can you believe it?
Wow.
I mean, you really have to be, you know, you have to be an altruistic volunteer type person to sign up for this.
Yeah, dedicated, sure.
Because we didn't pay them very much for their time, I promise you.
Right.
So, so we followed these folks for a year, and almost all of them stuck with us and provided information on how their pain was doing, how they were functioning, you know, completed performance testing and all kinds of things every 3 months for the course of the whole year. And then we compared the two groups to see how they did.
Yeah, you know, and I would go out on a limb and say probably unless they were veterans, you know, you can't get a more giving back community than veterans. And so for veterans to stick with it like that, I think you have the right category.
Well, yeah, you're willing to say, I'm hurting.
Right.
And I might continue to hurt for a year because I'm not getting an opioid.
But I'm going to find results for other veterans.
Yeah. And I mean, exactly. We asked people why they volunteered for this study, and absolutely the most common answer was I wanted to help my fellow veterans.
That's cool.
So I read, and I don't know if your results pointed this out. Now, I recently read that over-the-counter medications, Tylenol, and aspirin, as you mentioned, were just as effective in many cases as opioids.
And that is essentially what we found. Although, you know, just of course, because there is a lot of gray area here, I will say it wasn't just over-the-counter medicines. So we found that the non-opioids actually did just as well than the opioids for pain-related interference with activity, and that actually the non-opioid medications were better than the opioids for pain itself.
Wow.
For the pain sensation itself over 12 months. People had far more side effects than the opioid group.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
Is that because there's a resistance that's built up to some degree?
That's a good point, like an immunity kind of thing.
It is kind of like immunity. The body develops tolerance to opioids. And so, if you keep taking the same dose, it just has the effect wears off over time. So we think that's part of the reason why they maybe don't work as well over the long run as people would hope they would.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of people, when they're prescribed opioids to begin with, whether it's a surgery or a knee replacement or something like that, you know, initially you take them for a certain amount of time and then you stop. And I think a lot of people, I don't know if a lot, but but some people continue that, and then it gets to the point where they can't stop. And that's the other thing, doctor. I mean, it's an impressive study. You got very factual results. What does that do to somebody who still wants to take their opioids? That's going to be the tough part then, right? To say, listen, we've got this proof, and we've got this this study to show you that you don't need those. And how many people are going to say, I'm still going to take those?
Well, you know, it's tough because everyone is an individual.
Right.
And, you know, certainly one thing about the study is that people had very close attention to their pain management. Mm-hmm. So all these folks were talking to a expert clinical pharmacist about 9 times over 12 months. So, you know, like a monthly phone call. How is the medication going? How are you doing? Are you better? Are you having side effects? And if people were not better or they were having side effects, we stopped the medicine, we changed it, we made it, we made an adjustment. So it wasn't just kind of set it and forget it for 12 months. And
right.
I think that for a lot of people, that's what it is. They, you know, what they probably need is more careful attention to their pain management so they can get the mm-hmm. most out of non-opioid therapies. And maybe they can actually find that they can get off the opioids and have just as good of pain control and quality of life. Often the opioids just aren't doing much for anyone after a certain amount of time. And the only way to find out if that's the case is to try really slowly backing down on those and try some other things and see.
Well, I'm kind of, pain's a personal thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
And everybody's threshold is different, I would imagine. So, you know, it's, again, I'm not real smart, so I'm trying to figure out, well, I might not feel as much pain as Randy does. So how do you know that what's being prescribed is
the same?
You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, pain is more than a number. You're right. It's not, you know, we ask about those 0 to 10s, but that only gets that part of the story.
Yeah.
You really do have to really talk about how is pain affecting somebody's life. Is it interfering with their ability to, you know, go to work,
sleep,
to walk, to exercise, you know, and then your treatment should focus on not just the pain itself, but also whatever it's interfering with. Okay, let's work on both the pain and the sleep.
You're right.
Both the pain and the physical activity.
But Dr. Krebs, you got to feel great about this study. I mean, this is pretty groundbreaking stuff that you've uncovered, and I know that it's certainly been in the spotlight, everywhere you look in terms of people finding out about this. But congratulations on a great study. I mean, that's some really strong findings.
And I know we don't have much time, but I've got to ask this question. cannabis, is that entering into any of these studies?
We did not study cannabis.
And I know why, because of the federal law.
Right.
It is hard to study. And there have been studies of cannabis products, particularly in Europe, however. And I must say that so far, the evidence doesn't look great for cannabis.
Okay.
So I don't think it's going to be the answer here, but I definitely think we need the research to know. I think the main message is we do have established known treatments, and many people just don't get those treatments. They don't get access to them, or they don't get enough attention to their pain problem. So,
well, the good thing that we have on this show, Dr. Krebs, is that Jerry is conducting his own study. And so as soon as we have those results available.
And it should be legitimate results because it's about a 50-year.
That's right. Yeah. So, there's only one person in the study, but still, it's going to be very relevant when we get that done. But
excellent. And, you know, if you can detail somebody to work on red tape, you know, my team would be happy to study this. But
right.
I don't know if I can take the paperwork.
Well, I can tell you, I'm pretty good at sucking it up and carrying on. I had surgery a month ago, actually, today. It was a month ago today.
Right.
And they gave me pain pills the first day when I was in the hospital. Second day, they said, do you need a pain pill? And I'm like, no. And they looked at me, are you sure you don't need a pain pill?
I got a bunch of them.
Yeah. They were confused by it.
But, you know, here you are. So opioids do have a place.
Right.
But, you know, we just we do need them. They are valuable drugs. And I don't think I'd undergo a major surgery without opioids.
Yeah.
But I would try to get off them as soon as I could afterwards.
Well, the problem isn't the drug itself. It's there's a ton of unresponsible people, irresponsible people.
Right.
Who are prescribing these things or doling them out when they shouldn't be?
It's the easiest way to do. And Dr. Krebs, kind of back to your point about getting your health professional to let you know consistent level of care. You know, a lot of times you get 7 minutes with your doctor. It's much easier for your doctor to say, take this. And so, you know, you kind of get
shut up and get out.
Gets back
and
to
if
that.
Your doctor's telling you, hey, this is the only option, this is what you got to take, you know, probably time to look for a new doctor.
Find another doctor, right. Hey, Dr. Krebs, thank you so much for being on with us. Really appreciate it, and thank you for the study.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
We'll be right back on the National Defense right after this word from Farmers Insurance. When you're dealing with life's ups and downs, it helps to know the ins and outs of insurance. Farmers Insurance has been sharing practical insurance knowledge for more than 89 years. At Farmers, we know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two. Find an agent at farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
How do you thank the millions of men and women who have fought so bravely for our country over the years? At the Home Depot, we think it takes more than words. We believe the best way to show gratitude is to do gratitude. The Home Depot Foundation is committed to veterans and their families, improving their homes and their lives. Since 2011, we've invested $160 million to veteran causes and impacted over 26,000 veteran homes. By 2020, we'll grow that investment to $250 million. From simple wheelchair ramps to complete home makeovers, transitional housing, community support, we consider it a duty and a privilege to serve senior, wounded, and homeless veterans the best ways we know how. After all they've given us, it's the least we could do. $250 million by 2020. Doing more for veterans. Doing gratitude. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing.
Home is not just something you can see or touch. Home is a feeling. It's the place where you feel safe to have those little moments that mean everything. At ADT, we believe that feeling should always be there. Whether it's at your house or your business, we help keep you safe so you can have those moments that make you feel at home. Wherever you are.
All right, welcome to F-150 Radio. Today, the new 2018 Ford F-150. It doesn't just raise the bar, it is the bar. Why? Eugene, go.
I think because Ford engineers always add new stuff, so the competition can't catch up.
Whoa, Eugene sounds like an expert.
Well, I got a store that sells exclusively bar-raising merchandise, like a calendar with an extra month.
An extra month?
Extrebuary. It has 32 days.
So you can appreciate the new 2018 F-150 raising the bar with available Bliss with trailer coverage. It monitors your trucks and your trailer's blind spots.
How about our new bar-raising poker chips? You can play with them or eat them. So,
the new 2018 F-150 raises the bar with auto start stop, standard on all engines, and an available 10-speed transmission.
We have sandals with available built-in socks.
And we are out of time.
Huge in Oregon.
This is the new 2018 Ford F-150. It doesn't just raise the bar, it is the bar.
Driver assist features like Bliss are supplemental and do not replace the driver's attention, judgment, and the need to control the vehicle.
This is the National Defense.
Welcome back into the National Defense. It's Randy Miller, and it's time for another episode of Eye Insights with VSP, VSP Vision Care, and Dr. Daniel Mannon, who's... Hey, let me ask you a little bit about your career with the Navy. You were an optometrist for the Navy and Naval Commander. Thank you for your service. How was that for you, and how was your transition?
Terrific. I really enjoyed my time in the Navy. I started out at Naval Hospital San Diego, ended up down at the Marine Corps Recruit Depot, had a great time down there, and then spent the rest of my time in the Navy Reserve up in the Portland, Oregon area. But I was always attached to the Marine Corps, so I have a special place in my heart for the Marines.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Mannon, for the tips that you've been supplying us here over the past few weeks. And it seems like diabetes has come up in about every conversation. American Diabetes Alert Day is March 27th, which the detection of diabetes through an eye exam. How can diabetes affect your eyes?
Well, diabetes is a big problem, as we know. It's one of our major health problems in the United States, and it's also the leading cause of blindness among adults between the ages of 20 and 74. in the United States.
Say that again. I don't want people to miss that.
Diabetes is the leading cause of new blindness in the age category 20 to 74 in the United States.
Wow. I had no idea.
It can lead to problems like glaucoma and cataracts. It can lead to diabetic retinopathy, which is the specific issue where diabetes impacts the eye. But it's a big, big problem.
Wow. That is incredible. I had no idea. And I've heard this term before. Maybe you can kind of explain this, the diabetic retinopathy. What is that?
Well, diabetic retinopathy is simply a description of the problem that diabetes causes in blood vessels. Diabetes can damage blood vessels, and it does so by causing them to swell and then eventually to leak fluid, impairing the circulation. And this process can go on, and it can impact wherever the circulation is impacted, it will impact the function of that tissue. And because the eye is just full of blood vessels, the retina is a very vascular tissue. That's the nervous part of the eye. The eye is at risk for diabetes and certainly for diabetic retinopathy.
And so you mentioned that one age group, but who is at risk for that?
Well, there's a lot of people who are at risk for diabetic retinopathy. We could start with the group of people called pre-diabetics. There's a lot of people who have been identified as pre-diabetics.
Yeah, that's kind of a newer term, isn't it, in the past 10 years?
It is. It's kind of a catch-all term, but there's an awful lot of people who have certain characteristics that may make them more prone to diabetes. But it also impacts other people at risk, people who've had diabetes for a long time, people who don't control their blood sugar properly, people who smoke, use too much alcohol, have high blood pressure. There's a whole host of things. And your risk category, the more important it is that you be real conscientious about your eye care.
So I think that the message overall there is, if you don't know, get checked, right?
You have to do it. And I would go so far as to say that, managing diabetes really is a team sport. It involves the patient doing their job. It involves the eye doctor doing their job, but it also involves the family practice or internist, the primary care doctor doing their job. And when those three communicate and they keep track of where they're at, they have a far better chance of limiting the exposure and making sure that they maintain good health for a lifetime. And we do have some really great news. Certain retired members of the uniformed services and their families, as well as most of the family members of active duty servicemen and women, are going to be offered vision care in January of 2019.
Wow.
Now, that's quite a ways away, but yet if you want to kind of get primed and ready to go, you can go to tricare.benefeds.com and get some more information, and we're looking forward to seeing many of those folks in our offices.
That's tricare.benefeds.com, BENEFEDS.com. Dr. Mann, thank you again this week. Eye Insights with VSP. And we'll be back here next week with a brand new edition on the National Defense.
It's Ford F-150 Radio. Today we're talking how Ford, the official truck of the NFL, once again has the awesome job of recognizing the Built Ford Tough Offensive Line of the Week. Marty, go.
Hi, Mirhawk in high school, the Purple Panthers, 1989.
Say what?
Now that was an offensive line. Me, Jimmy, Dwayne, Kiko, Melvin, Mount Everest.
This is the big time, buddy. And each week, Ford F-150 salutes the NFL O-line that outperforms all the others.
But they don't have the camaraderie us guys had.
Yeah, Built Ford Tough NFL Offensive Lines of the Week have camaraderie, Marty. They're finely tuned machines, like the new 2018 Ford F-150. It doesn't just raise the bar, it is the bar.
I remember the big game, state semis, our QB calls out naked potato mouthwash.
Okay, listen.
A lot of people think that was the night I earned my All-Tri-County honorable mention. A lot of people!
Oops, Marty must have gone through a tunnel. Go to NFL.com and follow NFL analyst and former Pro Bowl center Sean O'Hara as he picks the Built Ford Tough Offensive Line of the Week.
This is the National Defense.